I'll go ahead. I'm not close enough. Go ahead and call our February 16th, 2026 pre-council to order. Our main topic today is the general fund outlook and revenue proposal. So I'm assuming I just kick this over to you, Matthew Liu. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And can I ask before we get into it, do you want us to ask questions as you go through the slides or wait until the end and then discussion?
If you have questions, we'd be happy to answer them as we go.
Perfect. Thank you.
So we have a few discussion points for today, and they are here as follows. We're going to talk a little bit about the general fund, FTEs, and the expense breakdown. And when we do this, we'll do this for each of the functional groups within the general fund. Then we'll look at the revenue for the general fund. We'll look at sales and use tax outlook, additional general sales and use tax, and then what the priorities would be for that additional sales and use tax or additional revenue. So here you have a breakdown of general fund expenditures for the fiscal year 26 budget. As you can see, public safety makes up almost half of our expenditures in the budget, followed up by health and environment, which includes the health department. Here's what the FTE count looks like per that same breakdown within the general fund. So public safety makes up over half of that, of the general fund full-time equivalents. And then again, that's followed by health and environment that includes the health department. So for public works in our definition within the general fund has streets and engineering and then parking enforcement. The changes for fiscal year 26 or through this time period. So the time period we're looking at is basically 19 through 26. And so we've had the addition of administrative supervisor in 26 and then parking enforcement. It went to police and then it went back to public works within this time period as well. And so looking at the funding for public works, about 70% of all funding for public works comes from the transportation sales tax. So the funding mechanism for each of these functional groups is very important, and you'll see why when we come to public safety.
Yeah,
thanks. Matthew, when parking moved from police to public works, did funding follow it, or how does that work?
So parking has the enforcement piece, is it in?
Like, are you asking about the funding for parking?
Yeah.
Parking enforcement?
Well, yeah, and how, you know, personnel were paid for previous too.
So most of that funding came from just general revenues. There wasn't a specific funding source for parking enforcement. So that didn't really change when it moved to public safety.
Okay.
For public works, but it was more just moving it from one category to the other.
Thanks.
So here are the FTEs for public works. See, it's kind of up and down, and you can see that movement in 21 was that shift back to the police department, and then you see they came back, I believe, in 25 was when it came back. Here's the budget breakdown for that same time period. So we increased from a little over 11 million to just under 17 million within that time period.
Just quickly, just to point out on all these slides, the blue is going to represent salaries and wages, and then other expenditures are in orange. So just kind of, that's kind of a key color combination throughout these slides going forward.
And just to clarify, other expenditures, especially for general fund, also would be things like contractual services,
yes.
Fleet,
Yeah, basically it's travel and training, materials and supplies, contractual services, that makes up the bulk of that.
So health and environment, the offices or the departments that are within health and environment are public health and human services, community development, housing and neighborhood programs, economic development, cultural affairs, and the Office of Sustainability. The changes within this time period were the additions of code enforcement specialists in fiscal year 25. The funding, so 33% of all health expenses are offset by the county, and then health also receives around 4.4 in state and federal grants, and that's for fiscal year 26. It's been more in some years, it's been less in some years. So, and then sustainability receives their funding from the utilities.
So you want to make the distinction. Then we talk about health and that narrative, it's the public health department. It's
yes.
not the total
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, that's
health and environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Betsy.
Can I
microphone's next
one? Can I ask what the budget is for sustainability in the utilities department?
It would be this that $600,000. That's what they received to $635,000.
There's a transfer that comes in from the general fund from the utilities, and that total transfer comes to that 635 amount. So
it comes from the general fund, or it comes through
the utilities. The transfers come from utilities into the general fund. So it's an expense in the utilities. It's revenue in the general fund. That revenue is used to fund sustainability.
Okay, thank you.
Here are the numbers for the departments within health and environment. And so we moved from 128 individuals in fiscal year 19 to about 170 in 26. In 23, I guess basically in 22, that's when we received a lot of the COVID money and we started to get some additional funding for additional programs within health. And so you can see that kind of rise over those few years. But then again, it dropped off some, I believe in fiscal year 25 within health, but we've had some other additions as well. So. Here's a budget comparison for that time frame as well. So moving from a little under 14 million to just over 25 million within that time frame.
Are we going to lose a lot of this, though, with the ARPA funding going away?
Not necessarily, no. The ARPA funding is not necessarily looked at in this bucket.
Okay.
It's in a separate bucket of money.
Okay.
So here's our general administration departments. Who all is included in general administration is the city clerk, city manager's office, finance, HR, law, and public works administration. And so that's just the admin for public works. Changes include the PMO moving from IT into the CMO in 24. So that added around eight positions, I believe, moved from IT into city manager's office. And so currently around 2.4 million of expenses are offset by intergovernmental revenue because these departments are the administration for the whole city, not just for the general fund.
It might be a good idea for those who are maybe newer to council or for just refreshers for all to remind what you mean by that.
So
like the fact that utilities don't have their own HR department.
Right.
So if you want to go.
So out for every fund, every department within the city, finance, the CMO, city clerk, human resources, all of these departments are only housed in the general fund. So all of the other departments, all the other funds within the city also use a portion of these departments to help do their day-to-day activities. And so that's why those costs are spread from those funds into the general fund.
So is this the entire budget for these general administration things, just 2.4 million?
That's just part of it.
And that's the part that's
supplemented.
Offset by the intergovernmental revenue?
That's correct. And so from 19 to 26, we've seen it move from 93 positions to 109 positions. And so the bulk of that being the move from the PMO or project management office into city manager's office. Here's a look at the budget during that same time period. And so we moved from just under 10 million to around 15 million in 26.
I have a question.
Yes.
You got the mic. Thanks.
I seem to see a big change in each of these areas, at least beginning in 24, but really in 23, where there's are significant increases here in terms of personnel and also, well, not personnel so much, but in terms of the budget. And salaries seem to be the largest portion of that. So we're seeing in each of these kinds of increases because of pay increases that we've been providing over that period of time. Are there other things that have contributed to that as well?
Go ahead.
You know, that's a big part of it. It's the that we've made a commitment to our employees. And so we did our pay and classification study. In that study, we started making adjustments to salaries. The other thing is we've also seen an increase in our health insurance costs. And so those combinations of salaries and benefits is why you've seen that rise.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
Okay. Supporting activities. The departments within supporting activities are the facilities management, creative services, and the contact center. Over this period of time, we've seen four FTEs in the facilities management in fiscal year 25. The funding, about $795,000 of expenses are offset by intergovernmental revenue. So just like with the administrative portion, these three departments also do work for all the funds within the city. And so there's a small offset of intergovernmental fees to them. So here's the look at the FTEs from fiscal year 21 to 26. The difference between this one and the others is that a few of these funds weren't departments weren't established in the way they are now until 21. So we couldn't go. It wasn't an apples-to-apples comparison if we went to 19. And then here's the budget for that same time period. So just under 4 million in 21 to a little bit over 5 million in fiscal year 26. And then finally, we get to public safety. So what is included in this public safety breakout is fire, the municipal court, and police. And so some of the changes include a one-time mid-year adjustment of $1.5 million in 25, and that was mostly for the upgrades to, I believe it was Flock and Axon, and there are a few other things in there as well. We included five additional sworn officers that moved from police into the regional airport in fiscal year 26. And then fire increased around 40.5 FTE and police increased about 43 FTE from 19 to 26. And so one of the things that we were, yes.
Yeah. No, I was going to say. Can you grab the microphone,
please? I had asked this question earlier and I appreciate the answer. But basically, for fire, the 40 FTE, 40.5 increase was predominantly in firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for the police, the majority of it was actually civilian employees. which I understand was it used to put police back on the streets. But we haven't had, as far as the total number of sworn officers, we haven't seen a significant increase since 2019. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
And so, sort of what I mentioned earlier about the funding, so police and fire receive minimal, they do receive some grants for things like uniforms, and I think fire receives a few grants for turnout gear, things like that. But it is very minimal compared to their budgets. It is mostly funded by general fund activities. So when you look at that half of the budget for general fund and then half the employees, it is mostly done. They're basically the only breakout or group of employees that are paid majority from the general fund activities.
And to be clear, that's because there's not as many grant options like there is for health, and Public Works has Department of Transportation. So we don't see as much opportunities for support from like the federal government or state.
Right.
Where we do, we go for it, but there's just not as many out there. Yeah, Nick.
I just want to clarify to be sure here that FY19 to 26, fire increase 40.5 and police 43. Those are budgeted, right? Those are not actually.
That's correct. But fire.
That's true for these other FTEs as well, right? When we're all these numbers, we're looking at actual FTEs budgeted, correct?
That's correct. But I believe fire is full, and I believe police is close. So, yes, but you are correct. This is a budgeted number. So here's a look at those FTEs. So for this sheet, though, when we're looking at these are actuals from 19 to 25. So those are the actual positions. And then you got a budgeted number for 26. And so that the number went down in 26 because of those airport officers being transferred over. And then here's your budget comparison. So from fiscal year 19, a little bit over 40 million to fiscal year 26, where we're closer to that $70 million mark.
Matthew, really quick before you go on, can you remind us again, I don't know if there's an easy way to do the percentage breakdown, and you might get into it later, about police, fire, and then municipal court is also included in this. I mean, I know it's a very small piece to it, but I think when we're trying to add up the numbers, do you get into that later with a slide, or is there a way to
kind how much for each? Mm-hmm. So municipal court is right around $800,000. Police, I believe, is around 36. You got to pull it up. We may be able to pull it up.
I just think it's good because I know later on we'll start like doing the math in our head of the different things, and it might not add up because in your proposal, I don't think there's a big increase to municipal court being proposed. So,
police is 35.1, and fire is 30 million.
Okay. Thank you.
So now we'll come to our revenue outlook. This is our current revenue outlook, revenue and versus expenditures. And so in 25, you see we met our revenue met our expenditure, but this was mostly due to that revenue increase that we saw from that settlement. That settlement was basically the savior for last year. That's something we cannot anticipate moving forward. So you see that line more on the trajectory of that 24 number for revenue as we look for 26 onward. Here's a breakdown of general fund revenue. So sales and use tax make up roughly 30%, a little less than 30%. That's followed by pilot payments, and then the other, and then intergovernmental, and then other taxes. Here's a breakdown of our estimated sales and use tax by fund. And so this kind of gives you a comparison of what each percentage breaks down, what each percentage breaks down to. So 1%, you get around $32 million in sales tax and five and use tax. And then capital improvements is a fourth of that. So is parks sales tax. The transportation sales tax is about a half of the general fund sales tax. So all in all, in total, the city brings in around $63 million in sales tax and $10 million in use tax. That's what we're estimating for fiscal year 26. Here's a look at the sales tax rates by most populated cities in Missouri. So as you can see, Columbia is, I guess, in sixth place or seventh place from the city portion and for the tax portion. So we're at 2% going to the city and 7.9% overall tax. And so sometimes this gets confusing with people because there are other taxing entities within the city of Columbia, but the city does not collect that tax and we do not profit off of any of that additional sales tax. So if you have a TDD or CID, Community Investment District, like we do downtown, the city does not receive that funding. One thing to note too about these sales, the sales tax rates, most of these listed have enacted some sort of public safety sales tax. I believe the last one was Independence, and I'm not for sure if their 1% sales tax is within this number, because these are the numbers that we pulled as of January, and I believe their tax wasn't enacted until this January. So that's the only one I'm a little skeptical about. It could be 9.6 on theirs. Here's what our current sales tax breakdown looks like. So 4.23% goes to the state and 1.75 goes to the county. The remainder comes to the city, which is at 2%. With this graph, we're looking at the year-over-year changes in use and sales tax, so the percentage change. So we had a few good years before 19, and we had that slight dip that was basically when the pandemic started. And then you see is basically the CARES and the ARPA money rolled in, you can see an increase in that percentage of sales tax. And that's basically because people were spending money during that time. There was an injection of money into the economy. And so you can see an increase in our sales tax receipts over that time. But as that money dwindled, you can see that percentage of sales tax increase go down till we get to fiscal year 25, where we actually had a negative year-over-year increase from 24 into 25.
So this is the change, right?
Yeah,
this isn't actually how much sales tax we bring in. You're just saying the change is 14% more than it was before, and now it's minus 1%?
Yes, that's correct.
From the year before?
From 24 to 25, yes.
Okay, thanks.
And so we do have another graph that kind of shows the year-over-year progression of how that sales tax progressed, but basically the percent change from year over year, that's what this graph depicts. So it's really wild to try to predict these type of things. Sales tax is pretty volatile. Property tax is the one that's pretty stable. You can always pretty much tell how much you're bringing in property tax, but sales tax, not so much. Has a lot to do with how the economy's doing. So here's how we currently forecast. The high mark here is a 2%, the middle is a 1%, and the bottom, the low, is basically zero. And unfortunately, we're on that low trajectory right now. Fiscal year 26 is not looking particularly good so far. We can't come out of this, I believe, but this is not a trend that we're just seeing here in Missouri. This is a nationwide trend. I'm not sure if everybody saw the sales tax information that came out from over the Christmas holiday. It's one of the slowest Christmas holidays, and it's been a really long time since we saw 2 years basically of no increase.
Yeah. Well, just quickly, we did get our sales tax earlier this month and that would cover the Christmas holiday, and it was basically flat, which pretty much correlates to what the nation's seeing in general. So, and now that we have a full quarter's worth of data in there, what we are pretty much assuming, unless there's a pretty drastic change, is that the 26 numbers are going to be pretty much where the 25 numbers were. So I wouldn't expect it to see it grow much at all, pretty much stay about flat from 25 to 26.
So this is what you were referring to. This is the actual what we brought in year to year. And so you see we moved from actual in 2010 to a little under 40 million to the actual in 25. We're bringing in just over 70 million. I do want to note that 22, that was the introduction of the use tax. So it kind of, it boosted some of that money from 22 to 23. But even with that use tax from 24 to 25, we still saw a drop. So while it was thought that the use tax would boost us up, but it basically just stabilized what we received in sales tax. We are seeing that more people, we're starting to see a reduction in sales tax and an increase in use tax though, but it's still following along that same line of around, well, basically last year was no growth, but we're still anticipating around a 1% for the total growth. And then here's our projection from 24 through, or well, 26 through 31 for sales and use tax. So, a little sporadic over the previous years, but this here represents around a 1% growth from 26 to 31. And just off of this year's optimistic.
Yeah. Can you use the microphone? Just keep it closer to
the
microphone.
You don't have somebody else. You're next to me. Going back to slide 22 again, I just want to clarify here. These numbers and the total revenue in light of the amounts in each of these years, is actual expenditures are the full budget.
So 24 and 25 are actual.
Okay.
And then the rest are projections.
Gotcha.
None of these are actually budgeted numbers. We're just projecting off of the year before or a number of years before. We usually try to
do the actual expenditures would be.
Right.
Okay, but that's really what I was looking for. Yeah. Okay, thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so now we get to a proposed 1% sales and use tax, basically for public safety. And so when we talk about public safety in this sense, we are only talking police and fire. We would not be talking about movement of municipal courts.
If I can,
yes.
I think it might be good, especially for those who haven't been in the conversation before. This is the first time us talking about this, to have maybe DeCarlin kind of set the groundwork for why we're having this conversation, if that's
okay.
Good for you.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. So one of the things that, if you can hear me, so as we started looking at our revenues, the one thing that was, you know, made plain that, you know, as Matt said, the two departments that are actually impacted the most by the general fund are our public safety departments, which are police and fire. And as we've had this demand for more resources, because if we're being honest with ourselves, we have not kept up with our needs for staffing, for equipment, for technology. And as we're trying to embrace moving forward to actually do those things, the cost has grown. And as you're looking at talking to our fire chief and looking at our fire service and understanding the need for us to have more officers to be responsive, especially for medical calls, we need to see more people on those trucks. And so it's adding an additional firefighter so we can have four people on trucks. When we talk to our police chief and looking at the demand for responding to police service, if we're going to actually adopt a true community policing platform that which will allow us to keep officers in our neighborhoods, we have to increase our staffing. And so as we started looking at ways to increase staffing, to increase equipment, because for every, if I'm correct, for every two police officers, that's another police car. And so it's also cameras and other type of camera facilities need to go on just to properly equip our officers. And so we're looking at how do we do that? And so what is that mechanism to try to get there? And so from a staff perspective, we looked at different intervals. We looked at what would a property tax look like. And what we came to realize is because of the demand and the need, a sales and use tax increase sounds like the most, I think the best approach for our organization at this time, especially with the high level needs that we have. And so from that standpoint, I think this is where we came up with this narrative to start having this conversation about what this could look like and what this would mean for our community. And so it
was. Yeah, I think kind of, because the last time we talked about this was probably over a year ago.
Correct.
And so I wanted to know, because we had talked about difference between sales tax, property tax, a hybrid, and so just knowing kind of where the proposal came from after that conversation is useful.
And one of the things you talked about, like grants for public safety. And so probably the one grant that we do have for staffing police departments is the COPS grant. Mm-hmm. The issue with the COPS grant is that once you enter into that grant prospect, it's about bringing those people on to be permanent status. And so if you hire three officers through COPS, the first year they'll pay 100% for the salary. The second year they'll pay around 75%. The third year it's 50%. The fourth year they're on you. And so it's understanding that even using that grant process, we're still gonna have to grow our revenues in order to sustain those employees. So Matthew.
Hold on, Nick has an inquisitive face on.
Feel like I have a resting inquisitive face. You said that the you looked at property tax, but came to the conclusion that sales tax is better for our organization. Can you say more about that?
Sure. So, Matt, if you want to talk about what we currently bring in for property tax.
So currently, we are at 43 cents per $100 assessed valuation with property tax, and that brings it around $11 million. So.
A third of the current police budget.
Right. And so it wouldn't even, I mean, yeah, you could increase it to 20 cent or 20 cent per 100 assessed valuation, but I mean, you're only looking at maybe bringing in $6 million. And with the type of expenditures that we currently have, that, I mean, we are already outpacing that. So, especially if we're talking about funding the pension, moving the loggers, adding additional fire stations. Each fire station has an expense of around $6 to $7 million just in personnel. That's not even to say how much it costs for the apparatus to go along with that fire station, and then the building maintenance as well. So there, we just have a lot of demand on a small pool of money right now. And a property tax, although it is steady and we know how much we'll get from it, it just wouldn't make too much sense because we wouldn't go out and say we're gonna spend additional 43 or double up our current property tax to get $11 million.
Yeah, that's it.
Matthew, I think this was before your time, but didn't we have a public sales property tax on the ballot a number of years ago and it failed?
I believe it was a sales tax, or was it property?
We had a development. We had the use tax before the first use, our,
that was before the use tax.
There was a development fee that I know was on.
There was a police tax that was, it was for capital projects.
Right.
But I think that was a sales tax.
It's listed on the tax sheet. So there was legislation passed for that to go on the ballot, and so it is still on the tax sheet as a available tax, but it has to be voted. It has to be voted by the people. But at Jeff City, it is on their tax roll, so I can go back and look to find what that's called. What is it called? 30-cent property tax increase.
If that was ever submitted to the voters.
No, he said it wasn't.
I don't know about the voters, but it is at the state. We are allowed for it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Statutory authority, but we don't believe it was ever submitted.
No, I don't think so. Valerie.
I feel like I don't have all that many questions, but these are things that we have discussed in check-in meetings. And I want to make sure that I'm repeating things so people can hear them in the public in an open meeting. I'm wondering if there is any validity to pursuing a combination of property tax and sales tax. And I specifically note that because the sales tax has been so unpredictable. Would that be two different ballot items?
That would be two different. And so, I mean, I think that's a perspective that we can look at. What we know is, you know, property tax tends to be a little bit more difficult to get past the voters. But you know, if that's a direction the council would like for us to pursue.
I would be cautious that when you split them like that, there is a high chance that one passes and one fails, and then you kind of have to. There's not a good way to build off of that or project into the future what that would be.
If we're counting on both and we split the predicted amount that we would need across both and one fails, then we haven't budgeted correctly for the one that passed.
Yes.
Nor would we want to over budget for both.
That's correct.
I think it also might just be confusing to people to have two different tax issues on the same ballot.
Sure.
I could be wrong, I guess, but I think it would be confusing.
This is why I asked if it would have to come up as two ballot issues and be voted on separately.
I'm curious, and I don't know that I would expect anyone to actually have this answer, because it's very spur of the moment based on that. But has anyone successfully gotten a combination property and sales tax approved on the same ballot? Have cities done that?
I haven't. I couldn't tell you for sure. I'd have to research it. But all of the cities that have passed a recent public safety tax have been sales tax.
I can accept that it's a wild question.
I would
generally prefer to have a property tax over a sales tax because it impacts residents differently and it impacts us differently. It's more predictable. That seems all around better if we had the ability to make the pool of money that we needed to cover public safety expenditures.
But I would also say also in Missouri right now, also property tax seems to be also kind of up in the air on something. So it's predictability is unfortunately also lessening.
Well,
that would be a problem.
Yeah.
Also here in Missouri, your property tax is mostly reserved for your school district. And so I've seen it in my past job, it was looked at as like an attack on the school's revenue when we tried. And so it was very hard discuss having that conversation with the school board to say, hey, we want to do this, and to make them understand this is why we want to do a property tax. We ended up getting it passed, but it is a big conversation because the schools are so much of your property tax. They get the lion's share.
And just as a side note, yeah, Sheila found it in November of 2014. The both issues were on the ballot at the same time and both failed. One was an increase for property tax to 30 cents per $100. And then the other was the development fee, which was 50 cents per square foot, and both failed. So in case you want to look that up, November 4th, 2014. Or just ask Sheila, she has it on her book. Okay, thank you. Yeah, Vera has a question.
Yes.
This is another one that I know I've talked to you about in a separate conversation, but in an effort to bring it to a public meeting. I know concerns have been raised that sales tax in Missouri, additional sales tax, needs to have legislative approval at the state level. Can you talk about whether we're concerned about that?
There, at the state level, there's a lot of different things going on. I can't speak to that right now, but I do know there's legislation that would affect income tax, and on the back end of that, it would affect the amount of sales tax that a municipality.
Is your question more to our ability?
Yes.
Ours would have to go to the ballot.
Yes, we would have to go to the ballot. I'm sorry.
Is the city of Columbia allowed to increase sales tax without the governor's approval?
Yes.
We are a charter city.
I'm sorry.
I know that. I was raising a question that has been.
Just say what you know.
Yes, that is
correct. Mackenzie, come over here with the microphone. So you don't even have a voice anyway.
Yeah, right. No voice. No
sorry. So I think the question that you're asking is that there was some talk going on. We had to seek legislative authority to get a public safety sales tax. The state allows municipalities to do up to 2 cent sales tax, general sales tax. Columbia only has imposed 1 cent. So we have that extra 1 cent capacity. And that's why Matthew on his slide called it the additional city sales tax as opposed to a public safety sales tax. So we call it an additional city sales tax up to 1% capacity. And it can be dedicated solely to public safety, police and fire.
Thank you for reading my mind. That was the exact question I was trying to get to.
Thank you.
We would have gotten there a little bit later. All right. So, I'm sorry. I must have hit next. And so, here you have what it would look like with an additional 1% and what the total for the city would look like. And so what we would be looking at would be a 1% dedicated to public safety. In financial terms and how we would account for it, we would create an additional fund within the city's current budget. It'll be a special revenue fund where this money will go into on top of a portion from the general fund, and we'll talk about that in a few slides later. But that would be basically to segregate these funds for use for only the police and fire departments. Here's what it would look like if 1% were passed. And so it would basically put us at 8.9% overall tax, sales tax rate, and 3 cents going to the city of Columbia. Again, Kansas City, St. Joseph, St. Louis all have a public safety tax, Independence as well. Springfield has some sort of public safety tax too. I'm not sure how they use that. I'm not sure if it's property or if it's sales tax.
And you said Independence just passed. And you said Independence just passed a 1 cent.
A 1 cent.
I think it's for the police department total.
I think that's we did this. I mean, we've been working with these numbers for a while, and so I'm not exactly sure if it is included in this number. I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either.
So again, here's a breakdown of what that would look like, just kind of showing the difference.
Says there.
Oh, yep. So it was not. It is 9.62 is where they're at. So yeah. So they would put them in third and drop us down to fifth. So. And here's that breakdown with 23%, 4.23 going to the state, 1.75 going to the county, and then 3% going to the city.
Can you do me a favor? I'm sorry, Matthew.
Yes.
We're skipping up. Can you go to slide 33 really quick? I think because at first I was like, oh, wait, why did that number change? I think it's just important to highlight, too, like when we say the 3%, it's because it's including those other specialty taxes that have also gone to the voters.
That's correct.
So are the capital improvement parks. Actually, does transportation sales tax go, I can't remember, is that part
it
of?
It is a permanent.
That's a permanent one. So, but those are, that's what adds up to the proposed 3%.
Yes.
Is the two that we already have, which one is dedicated to general fund sales tax. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And so here's what it would look like with the projections out. That first year, 27, is a partial year projection because if this was passed in an August ballot or after, this money would not be received until January or after. So that's why that 27 number is smaller than the rest of the numbers. This is what the impact would look like to a resident. And so for a $4 cup of coffee, you'd be talking about 4 cents. For a $12 meal, you would be looking at something like 12 cents additional that you would pay for that. And on $100 of retail purchase, you'd be looking at about $1 grocery as well, but it's a little different on the 107 because for groceries aren't charged the full sales tax. I think the state only takes 1%. Yeah. So it would be a little less than that for groceries, but it would still add $1 to it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so that bottom where it says that 107 and 108, that's like if you're buying something that's non-grocery. If it was $100 worth of groceries, it would be like $104.75 to $105.75, just to give you some context there.
That just confused things more.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because certain things are taxed at different rates, yeah. And yeah. Also
food,
different
food
legislation
is
proposing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Food's
yeah.
Taxed differently than non-food.
Yeah, Nick has a question.
Well, I'm thinking of a couple of things. I think I heard a story today about some efforts on the state level to limit localities, am I right, in terms of taxes on groceries in particular?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's still outstanding. I guess the point I'm getting at here is that, especially in the current environment, these projections and numbers,
they could change. Right.
The other thing I just point out is I'm looking at this and seeing this additional sales tax, raising this amount of money over a court period of time. That really doesn't help us because this would be a dedicated tax. This doesn't really help us with the total of our budgeted amount, does it? I mean, if we still are going to fall short of other items that are budgeted.
Well, we have some slides at the end to kind of, we'll kind of talk about some of your concerns there.
But I think the biggest part of it is when we start looking at what are some of our goals that we're trying to achieve. And so one thing that we've been talking about for the last 20 years with the city is our police and fire pension and trying to figure out what can we do in order to fix the pension issue that we have.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing that. I'm not arguing the need. I'm arguing that we need to be clear about what this will actually accomplish.
This would not be a cash flow for the city that now we can do all sorts of new and
it will or even the things we have budgeted. I mean, that's right.
It'll allow us hopefully to stabilize a little bit, but you're right. Yeah. I mean, there's things that there's additional things we'll have to do in order to continue to grow revenues.
Okay. I also think that's I think it's an important thing to point out, though, is that also what's currently happening in Jefferson City is while they're having conversations about cutting certain taxes, they're also freezing a lot of other ones and trying to put it more on the municipalities to deal with as well without supporting us in that. And so that's why I'm thankful that we did our legislative priorities to advocate on that. I don't know how well that will go over, but I think it's important for us to keep talking about.
I will say that the us as a city, we respond to fiscal notes on everything that is affecting us. So the finance department, in conjunction with the city manager's office, we've been very diligent in responding to those proposed legislation that may cut funding for the city.
So their expectations are that we still do just as much as we've always done. But yeah, Valerie, did you have a question?
Yeah, do we have this grocery tax freeze on our tracker?
Yes. Stacey's
Yeah. We'll ask for help later then.
Our economics team has put a fiscal note together showing the effects of it.
Yeah.
Just roughly speaking, all the sales tax we collect, 17% of it comes from food items. So removing that would have a devastating effect on our ability to keep bringing in the revenues we need to function.
Yeah, we were recently at our Government Finance Association meeting for the state last week, and there are a lot of cities in Missouri who basically depend on that revenue because maybe all the smaller communities, all they may have is a Walmart, you know, and so that is like the bulk of their sales tax revenue. So it's really concerning. So here is our current sales tax receipt, who is paying our current sales tax. So about 68% of our sales tax receipts come from our local residents, and about 32% of that comes from outside of the city. So 26% in-state, and then another 5% from out-of-state visitors. And we purchased some data through CVB to actually know some of this information. So,
how detailed did it get? Is local residents including like Ashland and Sturgeon, or just City of Columbia residents? Right.
You can get to a 10-mile radius of Columbia. So basically, so just
and go out 10 miles. So we cut it at 10-mile radius, basically.
Thank you.
So how will we fund this new public safety fund? Like I said earlier, we will be creating a separate fund to segregate those police and fire expenses. We would add that $38 million or whatever additional revenue we would receive from a 1% sales and use tax. And then we would add $60 million from the general fund to supplement as well. Initially, we would have enough to fund what we're currently doing, plus additional expenses as we move along. This is something that we would have to talk through a lot, though, about what would come first, because what we're anticipating is something like a $30 million bill for the movement of fire onto loggers. And so we would really have to figure out how we would fund that thing, how we would fund that movement.
Don, you had a question related to this one.
Yeah, so ongoing allocation from the general fund is $60 million. So that's a reduction. I think this year we budgeted 65 for fire and safety. So you're saying, you're suggesting we reduce that by 5 million then, instead of just maintaining the 65 and then
maintaining the 65. We right now we can't maintain the 65. So if you remember what that budget and the projections looked like over a period of time, that was maintaining that 65 and a little bit more each year. We cannot handle that in the general fund. We can handle about 60 million. And so I have some projection slides as well.
To Don's point, is the thought that part of that 38.6 is making up, so it's we're not cutting anything.
No.
And then you're talking about how do we phase in the additional both capital or the pension investments, as well as any capital, as well as any growth in staff. So,
yes.
And do we have numbers on that or plans on that?
Yes. And so I think that's the goal, is to get us to this point where we can do the things that will allow us to grow the needs of the department. So it's looking at the pension, it's looking at staff, and it's looking at equipment. And so it's looking at what the need is and then budgeting accordingly toward that need. And so I think that's what you'll see in the next few slides.
Yeah. Okay, so the next few slides, the coroner just said, we'll look at the additional sales use tax and the priorities for those. And so basically the most critical thing that we want to take care of is the police and firefighters retirement fund. We have our current funding gap for the police pension is 51% unfunded liability and 57% for the firefighters pension. We have a total unfunded liability of around $156 million. And then the breakdown between that is below 66 for police and 89 for fire million. What we would be looking at in addition to stabilizing the pension would be adding 50 police officers over 4 years and 40 firefighters over that same 4 year period. We'd be looking at a new police station, two new fire stations with apparatus, police vehicles, and then renovating three current fire stations, and then creating a police and fire technology plan, as well as a business building maintenance plan to kind of make sure that we are taking care of the buildings that we currently have. Yes.
Can you tell us anything about the technology plan and what that entails?
So both police and fire have a lot of ongoing technology needs. I think that's very evident as we did the Flock and the Axon. I think those two together are like 1.2 million a year. And so kind of planning for those instead of playing whack-a-mole as they come up. That's basically what this police and fire technology plan will be, to anticipate those expenses and be able to pay for them within the budget.
And so one of the things you're looking at with modern day policing, modern day fire, is that you rely on technology in order for you to, you know, move your forces. I think Chief Schaefer's done a great job of actually trying to modernize a lot of things that we're doing in the fire service. With that, there's a need for us to start buying new equipment, buying new technology, and it gets expensive. I think Chief Schlute's done the same thing. You know, we're really looking at how do we modernize what we do in order to make sure that we're providing the services that are needed for our community. And so actually taking a step back and looking at what technology we should be adopting and when is important. And that's a plan that we need to develop. And so it's actually creating a process to allow us to do just that.
So is this like a strategic plan that would come to council to review?
Parts of it would, yes, ma'am. Yeah. Because it all would have to be budgeted. But so we know as we're adopting these new platforms, we have the budget for it. And so that would come forward to the council to see exactly what we're looking to do. Okay. I think with the building maintenance fund, kind of like we've had to do with our vehicle maintenance fund, is for the longest time, we budgeted for it as it came up, and we never proactively looked forward to see exactly what our needs are. And so you find yourself now with House 5 needs to be completely redone. If we were budgeting for these things accordingly, we wouldn't be there. And so it's actually creating a process so we can go in and do these improvements on a regular basis as opposed to waiting till there's a disaster to do it. For the new police facility, if you go tour our current headquarters, I think right now we're looking at buying a new HVAC unit because the current unit has gone. But it's at its life, and if we don't make a change, we will find ourselves in trouble in the near future.
Yeah, Don.
So this would be the, like, 4 years here, and talking about stabilizing the pensions. I had asked a question about implementing this if it were passed 0.25% per year, just to lessen the impact as we go forward. But the response that I got, are you looking at, if we do the full 1% up front, that we can, in addition to this, also be able to stabilize the pensions within 4 years if we start at 1% from the outset?
Yes, there's a couple different ways we could look at doing this. A lot of this is going to depend on the conversations we have with the actuary that works for the pensioners.
Yeah, so I wouldn't necessarily commit to completely stabilizing the pension in 4 years.
No, not
I think in 4 years you'll be able to see that you've made huge strides in order to do a lot of that process. And I think in 4 years you'll be able to see that all firefighters will be on our loggers program. We'll see that new police officers will be on loggers, and we'll start being able to see momentum moving forward to stabilize the pension. But I would not say that within 4 years, without doing a true analysis, that we'll say it's stabilized within 4 years. But you're closer than where we're at with the 20-year model at our present plan.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, one real quick thing about setting timelines for a pension is that we are at the mercy of the markets for a great deal of our liabilities. So if, you know, we have a down market, you're going to be, you know, kind of fighting against the tide to make yourself better. So putting hard dates on when you expect things to occur would not be advisable, just from the fact that you're still relying on investment returns to have up to pull a big portion of that weight. So.
Yeah.
True, but regardless of whether it's under us or under loggers, any retirement fund is going to be somewhat dependent on the markets. Mm-hmm. For now, however far out you want to look.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, so here's kind of what we were talking about earlier with what it would look like with that. So with kind of stabilize on what would be going to police and fire within the general fund, you can see that it would allow for the general fund to have a little room from 27 onward. And so this is just basically on our same 1% increase for revenue, but just looking at that 60 million going instead of that 66. So it does bring it under our revenue. I mean, the expenses under our revenue when we bring it in. So that's why I was saying that we can't do the 66 now. If we did not have an additional revenue source within the general fund within the next few years, we have some real issues. There's going to have to be something done if we do not receive another revenue source.
Matthew, can I ask, and I know you don't have the pie chart for it, but I think something that would help kind of understand what this is moving forward is that percentage breakdown, right? So right now, 48.whatever% of our general fund goes to public safety. Mm-hmm. And so with this, Well, that same, the same dollars, not the additional dedicated 1%, mm-hmm. but it might be useful for us to have that sort of pie chart that shows what is 5 million in that huge pie mm-hmm. to see whether or not it looks like how much of a percentage we're changing or not changing. I don't know. It might be a lot more. I haven't, I think it's 160, whatever it is. I think it'd be useful to know going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely do that.
Yeah, Betsy.
Something else that I'd like to see anyway is I like your list of all the things that are the priorities if we can get this passed, but I guess I'd like it narrowed down or a little bit of like, what's the anticipation over the next 5 years or 10 years? You know, if we get this tax passed within 10 years, we will have this, 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 and this, you know, whether it's the 50 new police officers, whether it's the 40 more firefighters, whether it's, you know, I mean, it's, you know, $38 million sounds great, except we have a lot more funding needs than that over the next 5 to 10 years, whatever. And, you know, so while I like this idea, I think if we're going to, if the public's really going to back this, we need to be able to tell them exactly what we're planning to do with this money. Not, I mean, for me, this is too general.
Well, this is the list of what we plan to do within the next. This is just...
Here, don't come up to the microphone.
So this is over the next 5 years. So this would be the plan. We do have specific numbers outlined for each of these. We have about a 15-year look in the future projections off of these numbers, off of adding this many firefighters, this many police, and then kind of projecting off to see what that would look like. A piece of it is here in this public safety projection. So you do have a piece of this here, but it's not the actual numbers. We do have the numbers to back up these expenses moving forward. And that's something we can definitely look at if that's what you all want. But this was, for me, this was like an introduction for all of this information. So I'm sorry.
So Chief Schaefer and I have worked on some documents where we broke down based on the needs that you see up here, the number of officers, the number of firefighters, and then also the building projects. So for example, in my arena, we did some pricing last year with an architect and design firm on the South building that already exists. That project was about $36 million right now. So I don't profess to know anything about bonding. I should probably watch a YouTube video, but my understanding would be there'd be like a yearly payment of $1 million on that debt service. So there's $1 million there, whatever goes towards the pension. The people cost alone on my side, considering you have to buy cars, just for rough math, and it's actually not very rough math, it's pretty darn close. Every police officer that we hire with pay benefits and equipment, that's not counting the car, is about $135,000 a piece. At current wages. So if we hire 50, do the math on that, and then calculate $80,000 per police vehicle. So 25 cars for 50 officers. And then additionally, I would certainly want to look at what other professional staff might need to be hired to support those folks, because we potentially need more evidence unit staff or records staff, folks of that nature.
Yeah. So several months ago, Carlin came to Gold Chiefs and had us research what we needed. So we've been working for literally several months with our staff, researching actual costs, projecting future costs, and putting it into a matrix to back up all of the plan that's in front of you. We can send that. It's an Excel spreadsheet, but it's got the projections for growth.
I'll just add to this part of the conversation. For some of this, like, you know, I appreciate you saying, like, this is the list of the things that we have. And I think there's that point when we're talking to the public where we say, this is what my professional police chief has told me she wants to do over the next 5 years. This is what my professional fire chief has told me. I'm going to go with what they know, because I don't know what they, you know, I don't know what it is that they need to do their job. I just want to make sure we have the resources to do it. And so I think there's that conversation. I know there are some that would like us, you should pay off the pension tomorrow. We would love to. but they also have other expenses that they need to do. And so I appreciate the information and the research they put into it, and that they have worked with their staff on it. I'll just put that out there. Yeah, Nick.
I'm going to assume that if this were to pass, we wouldn't hire 50 police officers overnight. It's something that's going to take a period of years. So we'll have that kind of income for that purpose, but does this mean that we'll be doing more toward the pension in the early years of this? How would that roll out over time?
That part, it could play out in several different ways. It could be a year over year type of increase to the pension to pay one down and move to the other, or it could be an upfront cost and we would maybe delay the hiring of police and firefighters if we did the upfront cost maybe in the first year or 2 years, where you just pay basically what you receive from that sales tax to pay down that pension portion. And so it really depends. That's a plan that we all need to probably talk about. It's something that we'll have to talk about with the police and fire chief and the Carlin as well. So that part is kind of what we've projected, is looking at over time paying that down, not really paying it down all up front. But
I know these details are not, they're to be determined, but this is just where my mind is gone.
Oh, it's understandable.
And at $38 million per annum, that's a lot of money that we're not going to spend immediately on personnel or equipment for that matter. But we may spend some of that toward buildings and toward retirement funds. And so I'm just putting that out there because I'm imagining this is going to be part of the conversation as well. How would we go about extending those funds over time?
You're correct. I think, ideally, what we look at is just the whole breadth of everything that we're trying to do. And so you're looking at what are your pension processes in order to slowly move that down. We know we have a plan on, how do we move the fire department to loggers. And it's easier to move them to loggers than it is to the police department, just because of the way the pensions are set up. And we know what that cost is, so when and how do you pay for that? As we're looking at police and fire staffing, we have both an in-house police academy and an in-house fire academy. Both of those regularly run around, I want to say is it three classes a year, chiefs?
Two to three,
depending on needs. We also have a high number of police and firefighters that can retire. And so we're battling both that, where some of our higher paid officers are coming off and we're bringing on new, but we have to make sure that we're continuing on recruiting and bringing people on. Sure. And so I don't want to say that we wouldn't recruit and bring on new police and firefighters in the same breath as when we first get this tax, because we know the idea is that we hire, like in the last year, the last 2 years, we've hired around 50 police officers, Jill.
Pretty darn close.
But you've also had about 10, 15 retire out. And so it's right. So it's that constant ebb and flow of how do we keep things moving forward. We also know that we need to really start looking at our police precinct. And so, if we get this funding, it would allow us to go out and bond for that improvement. We know that there's three firehouses that need to be replaced. And so the two new firehouses probably wouldn't come on for maybe 5 to 6 years, but the three that need to be replaced are in the hopper that we really need to look at trying to move something forward. And most likely we'll bond for two of those. So I think the third one, we're in the process of actually building out now.
You were holding a mic a second ago, Betsy. Did you have a question? And then Valerie, you had your hand up.
I don't know that I have exactly a question, but I think I'd like to see something laid out saying, if this passes and we get $38 million a year, you can say $36 million, I don't care. We're planning to bond, for three fire stations, and this is what we anticipate it's going to cost per year to pay that back over 30 years. And I would like to see something that says, for those new fire stations, we're projecting over the next 5 years, we're going to need to buy this. I'd like something. Your list is fine.
We have all of that.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, we are. I mean, this was. what is up here is basically a projection of what you're talking about. So we have
I think we'll have people that will be asking us more specifics.
Yeah, we can do
specifics. I'm not sure I can just say, oh, look at this and trust us.
Well, yeah, so we have.
I think this is our first presentation of this. We haven't even started talking to the public. We're kind of seeing the overall, and then we will get the additional. That's at least what I understood what you just said.
That's correct.
2 slides ago.
Yeah. And so this is the culmination of that information. So you have your police and fire personnel in 27. And then we expand upon that with our projections moving forward. What is in these projections are 20 police and 20 fire for fiscal year. I believe it's 27, I think we have them budgeted for. The reason why we said 3 to 4 years on the police and the fire positions is we built in that factor of attrition, people retiring off. And so we built in 20 per year for each for the first 2 years, and then 10 in that third year. And then we projected those out from that, from 30 moving forward. And so we have those projections in here. The debt service line, which is that gray bar, is what we would expect to be paying for the debt service for the police precinct and the fire buildings. We estimated that we would do a debt issuance of, I think it was $50 million debt issuance. So we have what that rate would be, the interest rate that we'd be paying off of that. And so basically that debt service line is what we would be paying for the debt for those buildings as well. One thing though that I would be cautious about is how quickly we grow this fund, because if you notice in fiscal year 33, looking at all of these, everything holds true to what we have now, all the expenditures that we listed on the previous slides, that you see that line is starting to creep closer and closer to that revenue line. Yes, from 27 to 33, probably 35, we will be building a reserve within this fund, but there will be a time where those lines would potentially meet. And so just like what we're dealing with now, we just have to be cautious on how we grow and how fast we grow.
I think Betsy was really on the same question that I had. What I'm hearing from the folks who are sitting directly behind me is that they have all that information and everything's planned out for years to come. I think what I would be looking for before this becomes a ballot item would be the list that you previously showed with our objectives for what we would do with $36 million, and then some kind of implementation timeline. I'm fairly confident that we have that. We can't conceptually distill that out from this meeting, and I don't expect that, but I do expect to have it in hand for the voters beforehand.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's always been our plan. I mean, right now it's the first conversation about, is this something we want to entertain? And if it is, then we can kind of show you exactly what that plan would look like and how do we move forward. I mean, the one thing that Matthew is kind of pointing to is we still have to make sure that we're looking at how do we grow our revenue base? And so what does that look like? And so one of the things we're doing a little differently is that for economic development purposes, we've always done economic development to bring in the big boxes. We have not done economic development to actually go out and do retail recruitment. And so that's something that we're looking at trying to do now. And so that's not part of this conversation, but that is something that we really have to look at, is how do we grow our sales tax base?
By big boxes, you actually mean big employers, not big box stores, because that would be retail. Okay. Yeah. Jack, you have a question, and then Vera.
Out of curiosity, how do you do projections on the pension plans? Is it like so much per active officer? Or is it by positions? Like if we have many positions.
It's per officer. So
who's active?
That's correct. So there's a dollar amount tied to each individual within each of those pensions. And so we know the dollar amount for this year, and we just project that out for next year. We've even looked at if we paid down this amount, what that would do to what we're actually paying in. And so currently, I believe we're at, for fire, we're at 57% unfunded liability. So we basically, we pay 57% of the firefighters pay into this pension. What if we, with that move to loggers, that 57% would drop down to about 20 over a period of time. So we've kind of built that in as well into our projections. And the same thing with police.
Thank you.
Yeah, Vera.
I know that we had just heard about the increasing costs that we're going to be seeing for police vehicles as we get more officers. But on this chart here, I'm not seeing the light blue bar of other expenses grow by a lot. Is it that the vehicles got lumped into personnel because it comes with personnel costs? Or is it that the cost of the vehicles become a drop in a bucket when you're on the scale of 20 million per level?
Yeah, it's more the more second one. Latter. But also what we've done to kind of smooth out that is right now we're contributing to a vehicle and equipment replacement fund on a yearly basis. So they have an amount that they contribute on a yearly basis. So there's not these big ebbs and flows. So you don't have a 1 year you're spending 1.5 million and the next you're spending 500,000, you know what I mean? So I believe we built in something like 500,000 for the next few years. So it'll just, so that's why it's smooth and it's not a huge jump.
Thank you.
And that's the same way with the building maintenance as well and the technology. We've kind of built that in. So you add it up over years, you know, stretch out those payments like you do a bond payment or house payment or something like that, instead of paying a big, big chunk all at once.
There's a logistical question with, you know, these are obviously our proposed budgeted numbers, projections, but also this is projected of our budget. This is not projected of the income, because that's the orange, right? This is the projected of our budget, what we think we'll spend in each of those areas. Realistically, I mean, you mentioned, it growing. I mean, realistically, when you are looking at those, the numbers that you're putting in, especially for personnel, what if we don't meet it? And I say this to say, you know, right now we know that, you know, we propose that there's going to be $33 million for police, but with retirements or just vacancies, a certain amount of that general fund just goes into the reserves at the end of the year. Since this is a technically just an additional general sales tax, but it's dedicated for public safety. What will we do if we don't spend it all? Is that the ability, would we that just go towards the pension or like what's the plan?
It could. So what we're proposing is a fund. So this would not be general fund. This money would be in its own separate fund. So the money within that fund, once it's allocated to that fund, it stays there. So if you didn't spend all of a budget 1 year, just like the general fund, it rolls back and you have an additional amount to spend for that next year.
So it would not go into reserves.
It would go into reserves. Yeah, it would go into the reserves for this fund. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that, you know, it wasn't them off. If we spent all this political capital, social capital, actual capital, that we're continuing to do the intent of what it is we're trying to solve.
Right.
And it will allow you to do some of those extra things for public safety, because this fund now creates an ability to, if you do have this large reserve balance, then you can go in and maybe you add additional to the pension, or you, if there's a special project where the
apparatus that needs to be replaced.
Yes. Okay.
So I think that's
a discussion, which we've been doing for the last 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So what are the next steps? I mean, obviously you're looking for feedback from council on our thoughts to this. And then as well as, I think it'd be useful for council to hear, what are then the proposed next steps? You mentioned August for potential ballot. So logistically, something would need to come to council to put it on an August ballot. I assume by then we would have the detailed list that Betsy and Valerie and everybody's been kind of asking for. What would that be? And then would it be, would there be a committee formed to kind of go out to the voters and talk about it? What have you put? I'm going to look to you on this one. Sorry, Matthew. I'm not going to put it all on you. You're making eye contact.
No, I mean, I could speak to it, but I think it'd be better.
I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, so, you know, right now it's this introduction of this concept, and it's something that we want to pursue. If it is, then we can bring back that actual list of exactly what it would look like and when do we see those things being spent out. We know we have to work on ballot language, and so what does that look like? Then it's actually creating a committee to kind of move forward with that process. We have met with both the police union and the fire union to have this conversation about what we're looking at, but we gave the same presentation to them. I think they're in favor of it. They do want to see what the ballot language will look like. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure that it's guaranteed that it will just be for police and fire services, and that's exactly what we're proposing. But ideally, it's to allow us to kind of create this nexus where you can see exactly how this plan unfolds. I know there's a lot of people in the community who would like to understand exactly what we're doing and why we're doing it. And so having that conversation about what it looks like. But so what Betsy's asking for, you know, what does that plan look like and how do we see it moving over the next 5 to 10 years? We can show you exactly what that looks like and what the plan is.
Yeah, done.
A couple of questions, yeah, as far as what we're going to do with it. I mean, we've already got a template, the capital improvement sales tax. We have all the projects listed in approximate timelines. The other one would be what, if we're looking to put this on the August ballot, what's our deadline to vote on this?
Introduction at the first meeting in May.
And okay, vote so on the second.
Second meeting in May to vote?
Yeah.
And that'll
put it on the August ballot.
That'll put it on the August ballot. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Sheila. But yes. Jackie, then Vera.
Can you, I'm too short. Who is going to be working on the ballot language? Like, who's actually writing that language?
So that would be our city councilor.
Oh, Nancy, okay, thanks.
Vera.
Is May to August a realistic timeline to get this passed?
Mm-hmm. That's what we've done before. For the last four taxes that we've done, the use tax, the parks tax, and also the capital improvement sales tax. So that's been our process.
I think a lot of it relies on the information we get before May.
Correct.
Yes.
Right? And then obviously then hitting the pavement afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Being prepared in May to move immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think to this, you know, to both Betsy and Valerie's point, like, yeah, I agree. Obviously, voters are going to expect, residents are going to expect, what is this and what isn't this. It's hard so often is that the conversation happens before we've even sat down like we are today, right? And it's already kind of taken off on the radio, on the news and social media. And so it's like, how do we try to stay on top? And I think for us, it's asking for clarification, getting the information, hearing from the chiefs on like what it's going to be and what it's not, and then providing that. So I'll encourage all of us to have that. And so for city, we're going to lean on you a lot.
Absolutely.
To make sure that proactively getting that information. And then I would say for us too, as questions come up to us, sending them so that you have the opportunity to respond and we can respond to people who ask that. Yeah, Betsy.
And maybe you're going to be bringing this up, Barbara, but something else we need to think about is the city staff can go out to Rotary clubs, Kiwanis clubs, Pachyderms, you know, all the different clubs and give information.
Correct.
But they cannot advocate for this. So that's sort of our job or a committee and or a committee that we get together to help advocate for passage, assuming we want to advocate for that. But that's not something the city staff can do. So we need to be thinking about who we would like, you know, who's willing to work on a committee from the community. Maybe I'll pass it back to you, Barbara. I don't know if you're going to bring that up today or what.
No, I think it's good. I think it'll help us to have the information and then for us to kind of put the ask out there. Obviously working with local community groups, obviously reaching out to our unions to see their interest, and then also, you know, just all of us understanding and what role we'll play in talking to people about. So, other questions or staff questions on this? So when will this come, you know what I mean? Like, what's the next step in the conversation on this? You're working on the ballot language, or Nancy is.
Correct, and so we'll start working on that. So we'll share the ballot language with our union so that make sure that we're all on the same page, because this is going to be a collaborative approach. And we'll bring that forward. We'll also bring the plan on what it looks like for tackling the pension, tackling the staffing, tackling the our facilities, and so that you can see exactly how that will progress over the next 10 years with this grant, with this sales tax. The one thing that I do want, I wanted Matthew to touch on and hit this flyer for you, is there's this misunderstanding of our cash funds. And so you constantly see it on social media that the city has $532 million, and how come they're not using that to take care of its needs? And so this is a really good flyer that kind of explains exactly what is, what isn't. And so I'll kind of let Matthew kind of take that on and kind of talk about everything that's in it.
So basically, this is what we do on a quarterly basis when we report to you all the cash balances for the city. What we've included is a cover page that kind of breaks it down into terms that can be easily digested by the public to kind of understand what this cash is and why it's used. So this is one of the tools that we wanted to use upcoming as we start to talk about the sales tax. Another important thing that I think there's gonna be a discussion point probably for this next budget is what we're doing to look at our current revenues. So we are currently looking at a cost of service study for the complete city. So all looking at all of the services that we provide and the costs associated with those services. And so we'll have that ready for this new budget for you all to look at as well. We aren't necessarily saying we need to increase prices or anything, but it's something for you to look at to see the levels of service that we are offering and what we're actually getting back for those levels of service. On top of that, we have a vendor that will be looking at our business license fees. I know that was a hot topic last year, something that was brought up a few times, but that is something that we'll look at. We'll have an official document for that as well. So on top of looking at expenses, we're also looking at maximizing the revenue that we currently receive.
Yeah. Are we going to get a digital file of this so we can share it out?
Yes, I can send it to you now.
Is this what normally comes with the monthly finance report?
Yes,
this was part of your packet for last month.
But I can definitely send it out.
If we can get these pages separated out, thank you.
Any other questions for staff on this subject? Any other subject questions we have while we're still three council? Yeah, Betsy.
I don't have a question, but I want to thank the chiefs for going through with fine comb, apparently, as to what they actually need, and for you for getting this whole thing together. I know it's been at least 6 months of work, if not longer, to try and make sure that the information is correct and that we know what we need. So thank you.
Anything else? All right, well, I'll go ahead and oh, wait, Sheila, is there anything else that I need to ask that we have, like, scheduling questions or anything?
I don't believe
so. Okay. Because sometimes she's like, oh, you could have asked it during that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, appreciate it. I'll go ahead and close our pre-council at 6.